Welcome to the 358th episode of Mission Straight Talk. Thanks for joining me. We're going to talk today to someone who knows a ton about helping applicants get accepted to top MBA programs. And before I get into the nitty-gritty with her on that very important topic, and as well as others related to MBA and Masters in Data Analytics admissions, I want to invite you to our upcoming webinar this week. This Thursday, April 2nd, I'm presenting Get Accepted to Top MBA Programs with Low Stats. If you're concerned about a low GPA, a dip in your GPA, a low test score, be it GMAT or GRE, please feel free to join me virtually for the webinar. No need to go to someplace you don't want to be. There is no charge, but you do need to reserve your seat, and you can do so at accepted.com/358download. Again, that's accepted.com/358download.
Welcome to Admission Straight Talk, the podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. Your host is Accepted's founder and world-renowned admissions guru, Linda Abraham. At Accepted, our mission is to get you to that unforgettable moment when you read your acceptance email and shout, "Yes, I'm in!" Confident you'll be attending the perfect program to help you launch the career of your dreams.
Our guest today is no stranger to Admission Straight Talk. She was a guest shortly after joining Accepted and is returning to Admission Straight Talk just about 5 years later. Frankly, that's much too big a gap, a real omission on my part. Prior to joining Accepted, Esmeralda Cardinal was the former Associate Director of Admissions at Yale School of Management, the Director of MBA Admissions at the Eli Broad College of Business at Michigan State, and then across the pond, she served as a consultant to the Cardiff Business School in the UK. In the last 5 years, she's become a much-loved consultant at Accepted, helping Accepted's clients who are applying to MBA, data science, and data analytics programs get accepted. Today, she's going to share her expertise with you and me. Esmeralda, welcome to Admission Straight Talk.
Thank you.
Now, I started the podcast by mentioning that I will present a webinar on Thursday. That was before you came on. The webinar is Get Accepted to Top MBA Programs with Low Stats. What are your top tips for dealing with a low GPA?
So the GPA is very, very important for in the application. Even though, you know, once you have, if you have a low GPA, there is not much you can do about it. You can't just go back and erase in time. You can, there are ways that you can mitigate the impact of a low GPA in your application. So I would say the very first thing you could do is compensate a low GPA with a strong score, you know, whether strong GMAT or GRE. That would be the best thing. Also, create another way could be, and you could do it in conjunction with a high score, it would be to create an alternative transcript. By that I mean, take classes that are relevant to business school, like accounting, economics, statistics, calculus, and try to get solid A's on those. Then that would help you provide evidence that you can succeed academically at business school. Then also use the optional essay or the additional information essay, or sometimes they even provide a box in the application where you can explain what happened. As a former director of admissions, I can tell you that there is nothing better than having an applicant who can actually admit the situation. Because it tells you that the person knew and did research and knew that they had a lower GPA than their, you know, the rest of the class, for example, or than the average. And so I would say, admit that, explain what happened. You know, the admissions committee doesn't know you. So unless you tell them, they won't know what happened. Was it because of a family illness? Was it because you had to attend a personal emergency that had you distracted for some time? Was it that you were maybe overcommitted in some other extracurricular activities or sports, for example? Or was it that you have to work to support your school? Whatever it was, explain it in the optional essay, but also provide evidence of improvement in terms of, okay, do mention the classes where you did well, or maybe you had an upward trend. Maybe the first 2 years were low, but the other 2 years were higher. And maybe talk about those classes you have taken outside, the alternative transcript that I mentioned, et cetera, so they can see that you took the right course of action and that you are ready to succeed academically and business school. When you have low GMAT, then I would say, you know, the obvious would be, and if you are listening to this podcast in March, we are at the end of March right now, I would say retake it. This is the perfect time to practice more, to get the help of an online class, hire a tutor, You could do that, those things virtually now, you know, and so definitely prepare to retake if you felt that you have taken it as many times as possible.
Yeah.
You know, that you cannot, you know, go any higher, then do similar with the GPA. Tell them, for example, if you did have classes where you performed well, mention those in the optional essay. Explain what happened. Maybe you're not a good standardized test taker. Maybe you can explain that in the optional essay. Provide evidence that you have done. Maybe you work in finance and you do a lot of quantitative analytical skills, and then you could provide that experience in your essay and explain what you do to kind of mitigate the low scores. I've had so many clients admitted with low stats, with low GMATs or GPAs. It is possible. So don't let the low GPA or GMAT retain you from applying.
And I know you've also worked with a lot of international applicants, people for whom English is a second language. What if it's a low English proficiency score, like a low TOEFL, or is that again a case where it's best to just retake?
If you have the time and you think you can improve, absolutely retake. A lot of the times you could take like business English. I remember when I was at Yale, we always recommended that to our applicants that they felt that, you know, they were struggling with the verbal component of the GMAT or the GRE. Take business English classes and then show evidence of your English proficiency. Again, tell the admissions office that in that essay, maybe how long you have been in an English environment. Maybe you went even to elementary school and all your life to a bilingual school. Mention that. Mention how much you read, write, speak in English so they can see that you are proficient. Maybe you just were not as good in tests. But absolutely, there is a way to do that.
And just curious, just on a personal note, how did you get into MBA admissions?
Well, I started in student services when I was at the Yale School of Management. And I saw that there was a gap, you know, with minority and women recruitment. The school was kind of trying to bump the recruitment. So I started working in admissions without helping them first, and then became the associate director of admissions, primarily in charge of underrepresented minorities and women recruitment. That led after that to a position of director of admissions at Michigan State MBA program. And then I started serving as a consultant first in British business schools, helping them to diversify their population. And then, you know, 5 years ago to accept them.
Right. Now, you've been with that extensive background in admissions. You've now been at Accepted for 5 years as an admissions consultant. How has your experience working with individual applicants changed your perspective of the process?
Well, it has. It's interesting because it has been a very rewarding experience helping my clients get admitted to their dream schools. And my perspective changed that I am able to help them fix things that otherwise, as a director before, I couldn't. So as a director, I would read thousands of applications, and sometimes I would see they were very close to admission, but maybe because the resume wasn't very well crafted, or the essays didn't really answer the questions, or maybe could have taken the test again, they were not admitted, or they were waitlisted and then denied. As a consultant, I'm able to fix those things. Yeah. And it's amazing because I feel that I can definitely create an impact, and I absolutely love it.
Great. What do you wish applicants did before they come to you for assistance with their applications? And on this one, more than one thing is okay also.
I like to help them anywhere they are in the process. So they don't have to be in a particular process to come to me. I can help them. I meet them where they are. I can help the ones that are, if you don't know, even sometimes they don't even know what kind of grad school to go to, or they don't know if they, what type of MBA program, or their goals, and they are wavering between one and the other. There are other clients that know exactly the type of school they want to. They know exactly what the goals that they want after MBA in the long term, et cetera. And I can help those as well. So I think that there is not a single, I wouldn't say that you need to come to me with a certain knowledge or anything like that. I could meet you where you are, depending, regardless of the process where you are, regardless of the stage of where you are.
Okay. How do you think the applicants should approach the process? Well, you know, I mean, should they start with, I mean, I have a strong opinion on this one, but I mean, should they start with their post-MBA goals as a guide? Should they start with their qualifications? Where do you think? What's your opinion on this one?
This is a great question. I would say start definitely the goals in the type of program they want is always good, you know, even if you don't know exactly the name of the program or location. Right. But maybe with the goals, the type of program, do you want a program that is strong in marketing? Do you want a program that is strong and that it has the small versus a large class, et cetera? Then also look at your stats. That would be the second thing. Look at where you are and how you compare. Most of these programs have class profiles posted on the website. So just see where you are. And then that's where you start from there. I would say don't wait too long before contacting a consultant, before contacting us, for example, because you don't want, okay, the stats or whatever you want to deter you from, okay, to taking the next step and applying. But that's how, you know, that's where I pretty much, I would say, what would you say, Linda, about that?
Well, I always say start with the goals because I feel the goals will guide anybody in choosing the type of degree program, the school that they should focus on. They can change their goals. They're not signing a contract, but it does give one direction. And then obviously they have to look very closely at their qualifications, because if they just apply to programs that they're not qualified for, but would be great in terms of their goals, they'll just get rejected. So that's what I recommend. Mm-hmm. I also think that in terms of where can we kind of, you know, I agree with you that we can help the applicant at whatever point they come, you know, that we meet them where they're at. So if they come to us 2 weeks before the deadline with essay drafts, yes, we can help them. We can work on their essays and help them put the most important information in there and present themselves in a compelling and articulate way. But the ones who come to us early in the process, then we can also advise them on actually how to improve their profile, improve their qualifications, mm-hmm. and apply to the most appropriate schools for them. So I agree with you that we should meet them wherever they're at, but I do think that the applicants are best off coming to us early in the process.
Absolutely. The earlier that you come, the more help you can get. And a lot of the times coming too late, that means there's no time.
That means that meeting them at where they're at means we can't give them some of the advice we would have given them earlier.
Absolutely.
Because they don't have the time.
Right now I'm working with clients that are thinking of applying in September, you know?
Yeah.
And it's great because then we can work on timeline. We can work on strategy. We can work on the resume. We can work on lining recommendations, all those things. So by the time the essay questions come out, they would just start with the essays.
Right. Now, you've also developed quite an expertise. I mean, master's in data analytics and data science, those are programs that didn't really exist more than 5 years ago. They've really come about, and you've written a lot on the SOP topic, and you've helped several clients get into those programs. What are some of the differences between applying to typical, if you will, MBA program and applying to a master's in analytics program?
For, I would say there are a few differences, actually. For the MBA program, your leadership, your management experience of any kind, it's very important.
Right.
For data, leadership is not as important, but any experience you have with data analysis is, or with computer programming is important. So that's a difference. With MBA program, quantitative ability, you know, knowing of calculus, accounting, et cetera, it's important, but it's not critical. You can get in, you know, as a sociology major, maybe working in a nonprofit, you can get in a business school, you know, if your scores and everything else, you know, align well. With data, it's extremely important that you have some prerequisites even before you come in, like linear algebra, calculus, and some of the programming languages like R and C++, et cetera. And of course, your goals, what you want to do with one or the other, of course, change. You know, they have to be different. But those are the main difference, I would say.
Okay. So it's a little bit more of a technical degree as opposed to a general management degree.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes. Absolutely. All right.
Now, you've also worked with several of Accepta's consortium clients over the years. Mm-hmm. What advice do you have for them? And of course, that's, I think, how you started out, right? Working with underrepresented minorities. Okay.
Yes. It is. And before, the consortium used to only take applications for underrepresented minorities. Now they have expanded that you don't need to be an underrepresented minority to apply, but what you have done has to match what the mission of the consortium, which is leading underrepresented minorities into business education and just the business world in general. Right. So just look at your work experience and extracurricular activities and see if it matches the mission of the consortium. And that will tell you. So it doesn't matter where you come from. It doesn't matter if you are from an overrepresented demographic, even international students, as long as your mission matches the one of the consortium. And the other advice that I would give is don't focus on applying to one consortium schools. They have a list of 16.
Oh, yeah. They have a lot of schools now.
Apply to several. Because, you know, I've had clients that apply to one or two, then maybe they get waitlisted or whatever, and they think that that's too late for them to apply within the consortium. So just planning on applying to several of those schools, because the benefits of being in the consortium are very great.
Oh, yeah.
Very
big. Oh, for sure. Now, you yourself come from Central America.
Yeah.
And I know you worked when you were working for Yale and for Broad. I think you kind of specialized on Latin and Central America.
Yeah.
What advice you have for applicants coming from those countries and applying to U.S. MBA programs?
Yeah. I was born and raised in Nicaragua. So, you know, but I came here for college. So I've been here an hour more, you know, longer than when I was there. But anyway, I would say for Latin American clients, but this applies to anybody. But if you're Latino like me, make sure that your recommendation letter, for example, comes from your direct supervisor or your previous supervisor. What do I mean by that?
Yeah.
In this country, applying to American business schools and European business school for that matter, it's more important that the person recommending you is somebody that works with you closely and as a supervisor position than, for example, the president of the CFO or the CEO of the company. Whoever that person is, the role of the company is less important to the admissions committee than the interaction they had with you. They want someone who knows you well. That is your supervisor, not a colleague. That is your supervisor. So take that into consideration, because I know that comes up, and that's not sometimes necessarily the case if you want, are you applying for jobs within Latin America? You want somebody that, you know, so that's something that is kind of a line, and it comes back. Every time I have a Latino client, it always something I want to specify, and sometimes that's met with surprise. The other thing is your accomplishments in your resume have to be your accomplishment, not the company's accomplishments.
Okay, that's a really good point.
Keep that in mind. And so your resume can be job description. And it is pretty much trying to put about your what you have accomplished in that role with results, etc. But you, as a let's say financial analyst, as a real estate broker, it's supposed to the company as a whole.
Okay, and that's more of an issue with applicants coming from Latin America and Central America?
I've seen that it happens a lot with other countries, but I've seen that it's a general thing that
really?
I focus on with my Latino clients that I don't, and I understand, because on the backside, I know how the environment is over there.
Of course.
So I usually even say that, and I just know my people.
Okay. All right. I never noticed that. Okay, good. My pet peeve with resumes is when I've told you this, people put bullet points that basically says what their title says. So they're wasting space, and they're, you know, just anyway, that's all right. That's my pet peeve. Let's go back to you on this. Mm-hmm. Now, it is now March 18th, 2020. The whole world has stopped due to the coronavirus. We're, for all intents and purposes, all quarantined. How do you think the coronavirus is going to affect MBA admissions and business school, business education in the upcoming cycle?
I think we're all living in like this time of uncertainty that we don't know what's going to happen. I think definitely it's going to hurt the economy. You know, we all know that, not only in the States, but around the world. I would say we might see a decline in applications, but other people might argue that it might be the other way around. I would just say, if you're thinking of applying right now, it's the best time to do your research on schools and do a lot of that, because a lot of people have more time than normally, you know, because of being, you know, working from home, being forced to be at home. What we've seen in this pandemic is forcing schools to be a lot more flexible. So be ready and, you know, kind of checking the school's deadlines and things like that right now, because things are changing. I think we are going to have a very different, you know, application environment in the fall, probably because of this.
And do you think there's going to be a spike in applications next year?
What I'm thinking is, for those people that have a job, that have stable jobs, they might want to stick to them, you know, and not go to business schools. And the ones that, but there are a lot of people that might lose their jobs, and that's going to bring up the applications. So it is that level of uncertainty that I don't think it's going to be like it was this year. I think it's going to change. And it might be extremely high level of applications, or it might not.
We don't know. I'm anticipating that next year will be an uptick in applications because of the economic uncertainty, there's going to be a sense that business school will be a refuge from the storm. And when I get out of it, the storm will be over and I will be well positioned to, at that point, ride the wave. I'm mixing metaphors, but when the sun comes out, I'm going to be walking in it.
And if you think about in the past, every time the economy, you know,
contracted,
you know, it slows down, applications go up.
Right.
And you know, the opposite happens when the economy is healthy.
Right.
So it's something that, you know, that we need to be prepared for that.
Right. Right. No, I agree.
Now, having said that, if you were wondering whether to apply now, like you have pretty much things ready or not, and the schools are still accepting applications, go ahead and apply now. Because of that uncertainty, you don't know what's going to happen. So I would say, you know, check at round three deadlines. I normally would say, don't even think about round three, but because of situations right now, I would say, I would definitely take a look at that.
Yeah, I would completely agree with that. And I have been saying that. You and I were talking before we turned the recording on, and I was saying that if somebody has their GMAT score, GRE score, if you don't have that, you're kind of stuck at the moment. But if you have those test scores and you're thinking of applying and you're ready to and interested in the schools that have extended the deadline or interested in schools that you can still submit an application round three, I would seriously consider going for it. My sense is that application volume is down this year, not because of Corona, but just because of the economic boom, actually, and that schools are very uncertain about what's going on. By fall, it still may be partially online, but I think that as they get control of this, yes, schools are going to reopen. They're going to be in traditional format. We are going to start socializing again, and life will return. I don't know when it's going to happen. I don't know if it'll take 6 months or a year, but it will return. In the meantime, when that return takes place, I think the economy will pick up. Tourism will resume. Manufacturing will resume. And the graduate of 2022 and 2023 will probably be well positioned.
Yeah, absolutely. I absolutely agree with you.
Now, what can applicants do to learn about a school since they can't visit now? And I think even fairs or receptions are pretty much non-existent.
I would say try to research online as much as you can, you know, the schools. The fact that you can't go visit them should not be an excuse for not researching the schools. So I would say try to do that. Attend every webinars and online chats and virtual events. The schools usually have a number of those, and I'm assuming they're going to be increasing those, you know, number
yes,
of
they
those
are.
Because they can't provide you with a school visit. So try to attend those and be able to, you know, jot some down some notes about the schools. Now, a lot of my clients are using LinkedIn to connect with alumni and students. And it's amazing to me how much the generosity of students and alumni in terms of wanting to connect with them and telling them, explaining the situations, answering questions and things like that. So I actually definitely use LinkedIn for that purpose. And I think you would find that with the slowness that we have been forced to live, you know, in this situation, try to use that to your advantage in terms of trying to really be ready for your application. For application, you might not be able to take the test now, but you could prepare for it. You can take classes, etc. You know, you can take all the classes that you might need, you know, to bump up your GPA, for example, online. So absolutely try to do that during this time. I think that there is absolutely great time to do that because I don't think you're going to have this much time available in your hands in a long time after this.
Right. I think there's going to be an attempt by everybody, and there should be an attempt by everybody, to maintain as much of their normal life as they can. Mm-hmm. And if you were planning to go to business school or thinking about business school and you decide that it's right for you, I don't think coronavirus should change that. It might change a little bit the education you receive, and you have to decide if that's going to be worth it for you. It might change how and when you take that exam, whether it's the GMAT or the GRE or the executive assessment. But GMAC and ETS are going to be very motivated to develop a means of virtual testing. Yeah. They're not making any money as long as their testing centers are closed. So they're going to be really, really working on that. And I suspect that's going to happen soon. And again, the testing centers will ultimately be opened.
Absolutely.
Now, getting back to kind of moving away from Corona, it's nice not to think about it sometimes. What advice do you have for MBA reapplicants? Both as an admissions consultant and former admissions officer.
Yeah, the very first thing I would say, don't start your application without knowing exactly what went wrong. A lot of people think, oh, it is my GMAT. I'm just going to retake the GMAT and reapply. You don't know if that was the only problem. You don't know if that was the problem. You know, so I would say we have a very good actually service that is a rejection review service. It only takes 1 hour. And I'd say, send me your application and I'll review that for you. And I will tell you what went wrong, what steps you should take to improve that went wrong and fix those things and then reapply. Then you could use that however you want, but then you will have that information to help you with your next application. Fix those things and then show once you reapply. Show introspection that you thought about it, that you decide, that you realize what went wrong and you fix those things. Show growth in your work experience and extracurricular, your whole as person, and change all the things that you have changed. And I think when you have done that, business schools would appreciate that. And I've had so many clients. Every year I have a few that are reapplicants. And we start with that. And it doesn't mean that if you apply this year, that's it. Be very well mean. If you show that, a lot of the times you will be happily surprised.
Right.
Use this time to your advantage in terms of trying to prepare for business schools, just because you won't be as free in the coming months as you are now.
True. Okay. So Esmeralda, this has been great. Thanks so much for joining me today. As always, I've enjoyed talking to you offline and on. Listener, thank you too for tuning in. You can learn more about Esmeralda on her bio page at Accepted. I'll also link to it as well as to her contact page so that if you'd like to work with her, you can feel free to reach out and be sure that she is the one you would work with. I'm also going to link to articles she has written from the show notes at accept.com/358. If you found this show helpful, I have a favor to ask. Please share your thoughts on iTunes. There's a link in the show notes to our Apple Podcast page where you can leave that review. There are also links to Spotify and other large podcast sites where you can, again, drop that review. Doing so helps potential listeners find us and is very much appreciated on our end. This is Admission Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I'm your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.